Good morning and welcome everyone. It's a pleasure to see you all. My name is Hobie Perry. I work for the USDA Forest Service on the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota just across the river. And with my colleagues, Grant Donkey, Brian Walters, and Chris Woodall, working together with folks I've heard the International Soil Carbon Network mention, Luke Knave and Chris Swanston, we'd like to talk today about estimating forest soil organic carbon using National Forest Inventory data. The main message I want to leave you with today is that we're working very hard in the National Greenhouse Gas Inventory to improve the estimates of carbon in all pools, but in this particular case, soil carbon, by using field observations to build new models to replace the existing models we've been using for about the past 15 to 20 years that were based largely upon literature. As I mentioned, I work with a group of folks in soil carbon or the Forest Carbon Inventory Program, and this gives you a sense of all the pools that we're working on. We've essentially, by going pool by pool and trying to improve the pool science in each one of these, and lately our attention has turned to the forest floor and the soil organic matter, which I'll be discussing today. One of the motivations for us is this sense that soil organic carbon globally is recognized to represent upwards of 75% of biome carbon stocks, and yet in our estimates, we're only seeing those totals around 50%. So we've got some questions about the types of estimates that we're producing. Additionally, and this has come up several times already, many of the studies, including our own, are focused largely on the top 20 or 30 centimeters, but IPCC good practice guidance would encourage us to try to go much deeper into the profile. So part of what we're working on is trying to develop strategies for taking these observations to 20 centimeters and estimating pools down to 1 meter. One of the things I need to be very clear about in an organization like this one is that we are not a soil survey. We are not a soil characterization program. We are, however, a statistically robust sample of the forest soils across the United States. How that sample occurs is we've divided the landscape into a series of hexagons. We like to think of the Earth as a giant soccer ball. We're all big fans of World Cup and so forth. And for those of you who live in the area, are very excited. A team has just announced it's going to be moving to the area. And once we establish one of those hexagons, within that hexagon, we'll establish our traditional plot. And then on a series of sampling locations adjacent to our tree measurements, we'll collect information on the forest soil, sampling the forest floor in a 25 centimeter sampling frame, and then collecting mineral soil cores down to 20 centimeters. Then we can take the carbon content, the bulk density, the thickness, and account for the coarse fraction to be estimating the total carbon content, total soil carbon content in that layer. Just to give you a sense of the distribution of our observations across the country, the colors here are forest types, so the warm colors are hardwood types and the cool colors are coniferous types. This is dated 2012, which is when we roughly finished our initial sample of the nation. We're now in remeasurement. Those data are being processed, and we'll soon be adding those to the public database. If we start to then take advantage of the observations to compare to the estimates we've been producing over the past 15 years or so, let's look first at the forest floor. And this is the model that we've been using for a long time. I apologize to those in the back. I thought the screen might be a little bigger. But the model is pretty simplistic. It effectively focused on region, forest type, and stand age. That was the basic model of forest floor. And what we've seen when we compare the observations to the predictions that come out of that model is that at the low end, we tend to be observing more carbon than we predicted, and at the high end, we tend to be predicting more carbon than we observed. As we'll see in a few moments, it's this piece right here that's been causing us some problems with our estimates of forest floor carbon. An additional problem we ran into, again comparing the estimates to the observations, is that the model was spatially biased. The red colors here are where the predictions are well above the observations, and the blue colors are where the predictions are below the observations. Obviously, we'd like to see a more speckled pattern in there. Clearly, we've got some spatial bias that we need to reduce in any new models that we might produce. So we went back to first principles and thought about forest floor accumulation and looked at a suite of variables that we could have available at the national scale. Being a strategic level inventory, it's very important for us to have attributes that are available across the entire suite of plots. And then going through random forests and other modeling tools, we were able to develop a model that, for our purposes, we were really excited about because it maintained the error structure of the underlying data, and the model results turned out to be equivalent to the observations. The basic model turns out to be a function of latitude, longitude, and so forth. For those who can't distinguish what this is our forest type group code, above ground biomass, and this GMI is a ratio of evapotranspiration to rainfall. I'd also like to emphasize this U term. One of the things that we've been working on is including a bit of random error in each of our predictions because we want to reduce the regression towards the mean. We want to maintain the wide distribution because we're very interested in maintaining estimates of uncertainty. So once we do that, our estimates of forest floor carbon are now 44% smaller than what we've previously been reporting to the international community. Let's move then to some implications for that. One of the challenges we need to recognize is that IPCC good practice guidance relies upon the same methodology, which suggests that other nations are probably also overestimating their forest floor carbon stocks. So we need to be concerned about that. When we move to the mineral soil, as I mentioned, we've been taking measurements down to 20 centimeters. The IPCC would like us to be estimating at least to 30 centimeters. Our current model predictions go down to 1 meter. So ideally, we'll do the same thing with any new models that we might produce. Our traditional model that we've been using is really simplistic. It's effectively a regional average by forest type and then applied to all forest communities uniformly. One of the concerns we've got is that when we look at the distribution of samples used to inform things like Statsco, Sergo, and so forth, the blue dots, we see that they're not particularly well distributed across the forested landscape, particularly in the northern lake states. By contrast, the red dots, where we've been sampling, obviously being a forest inventory, we are in those landscapes. And so again, what we're trying to do is use these red dots to inform estimates of forest soil carbon. So we turned to our partners with the International Soil Carbon Network, and we went and looked at a number of profiles using our definition of forest land, selecting out those profiles that happen to also occur on forests, to try to build some models. In this particular case, this first step of how carbon decays with depth. And after evaluating several dozen models of soil organic carbon, it turns out that your basic log-log relationship turns out to be a pretty effective approximation of how that's going to work. So this is going to be our model of soil carbon with depth. It happens to yield normal residuals. And additionally, important for us, each of the models is different by soil order. So then we can account for variations in carbon by soil order. Okay. What we're left with then is a suite of decay functions by soil order. And effectively what we're going to try to do is shift the upper end of this curve back and forth based upon our observations of soil carbon in that landscape and then use these decay functions to predict soil carbon to greater depth. Additionally, we have these models of uncertainty. As I mentioned before, we're very fixated on estimates of that. We're then going to use random forests to go from our observations of the forest soils to the complete network of plots we've got across the country. We tested again an entire suite of variables, a whole alphabet soup of variables across our entire plot network, focusing on those attributes and geospatial data sources that were available at the broadest possible scale. And what we were left with was, again, this is now for soil organic carbon, a suite of variables, again, this would be forest type group, this ratio of precipitation, evapotranspiration, soil order, and surficial geology, the influence of things like glaciation, for example. And again, this U term, or introducing a bit of random error to each estimate to reduce our reduction towards our regression towards the mean. And again, when we look at our observations versus the predictions, we're very pleased that we're finding some equivalence there, and we test that statistically, we find that they are statistically equivalent, our estimates of soil carbon relative to the predictions that we're trying to make. Then we feed those estimates into our estimation engine, which is a series of statistical tools that we use to take these point samples and turn them into aerial estimates of carbon at the national scale. And what we find is that we've now got a 40% increase in soil organic carbon relative to previous estimates. So we've been underreporting forest soil carbon to the UNFCCC and the international community. Additionally, soil organic carbon now, in keeping with our expectations much more closely, represents about 70 to 71% of total forest carbon stocks across the United States. And then as we continue, we will maintain our focus on estimates of uncertainty so that as land managers and policymakers use this information to make decisions, they can have some sense of the quality of information that they're using to do so. So with that, I'll pause to see if anybody has any questions. Yeah.
Most of the smota saws that I've ever read about or measured
right.
are huge.
Right.
Carbon in the beef.
Yeah, we should expect some sort of other distribution there. This is a first approximation. We're trying to do some things relatively simply to at least represent an improvement. Don't get me wrong to think that this is the end-all, be-all, that we're done with this. We understand that there are some challenges with that, and we need to try to think more carefully about how that accumulates. Additionally, when we sample those smota saws, we're not exactly sure if we happen to be hitting those E horizons or not, so that's certainly a concern of ours.
Right, so using 30 centimeters to estimate the whole profile and missing the big bump down there.
I know, yeah, I understand that.
So there's a lot of baggage with soil survey and tectonic.
Right.
And one of those is your soil salt is a great example because it's an operational line concept that was set up because one group of people that when they soil that had soil characteristics that didn't meet the perfect concept of soil salt on their spouse of acreage, that's where they put all that form should look not be essentially exploitation. They're not macro. So you're going to miss.
Right. The models weren't as effective. I mean, we could consider that, but we're looking for some way to try to account for the expectation that different soils accumulate carbon at different rates. And so we have a sense that that's true. Order may not be the best surrogate for that, but ideally, conceptually, we need some way to understand that different soils are accumulating carbon in different ways. Yeah. No.
I have a lot of the same issues when we're using water. And if you at least knew what horizon height you had,
right.
it might give you a lot better sense of basically what models that you might want to apply.
That's a fair point. Yeah, one of the challenges we've got is that as a strategic inventory, unfortunately, it's not been a priority of the program to focus on hiring soil scientists to do this work. So the protocols... Well, I mean, I'm just acknowledging that, right? I mean,
that's a pretty simple thing to actually train somebody to do. At least figure out, am I in a B horizon, am I in an A horizon, am I in a B horizon?
I think we may think so. I think some of the people I work with would disagree with that. That's, yeah. No, I'm, please, you know, I'm...
All right, we gotta move on.
I'm happy to discuss this later at your convenience.